Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for March 25th, 2015. I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker. A Manhattan Beach woman is suing the Archdiocese of Los Angeles over allegations of sexual abuse. The charges are against an assistant pastor at American Martyrs Catholic Church. Sarah Crevoy is here to give us a full report.
A Manhattan Beach church volunteer filed the suit on Tuesday in the Los Angeles Superior Court against the Los Angeles Archdiocese, alleging sexual harassment and sexual battery by a priest. Kate Bergen is a mother of three. She's taught religious education and served as a Eucharistic minister for her church. She told investigators she was approached from behind and touched inappropriately by Reverend Nicholas Assee while preparing for a Sunday Mass last April. Manhattan Beach police told the LA Times that detectives never met with the accused priest, as he refused to speak to them without an attorney present, and no charges were filed.
A disillusioned Bergen sought the help of an organization called SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests.
I would have thought for sure that the Archdiocese would take care of it, but instead they have moved him to another parish, and those parishioners have no idea of what he did to me. And that's wrong.
A disillusioned Bergen sought the help of an organization called SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Father Assee left the American Martyrs Church and is purportedly on administrative leave. Bergen has filed her lawsuit in Los Angeles Superior Court, alleging sexual harassment, sexual battery, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Sarah Crevoy, Annenberg Radio News.
It's getting easier for Southern Californians to live green while doing what they do best, driving. The South Coast Air Quality Management District today opened a new hydrogen fueling station at its Diamond Bar headquarters. The station can fuel hydrogen-powered cars in as little as 3 minutes. Electric vehicles can take hours to fully charge. The advantage of both is that they emit zero pollutants. Janae A. Scott is part of the California Energy Commission.
Governor Brown has a plan for 1 million zero-emission vehicles in their supporting infrastructure by 2020 and 1.5 million zero-emission vehicles in the infrastructure to support them by 2025.
Hydrogen cars aren't free of controversy. The process of extracting hydrogen can generate a lot of pollution. But they're a step forward. Six other hydrogen fueling stations will open in Southern California over the next year. A member of the Trojan family has given a remarkable gift back to the university. USC received a $50 million donation from Mark Stevens, a Bay Area venture capitalist and philanthropist. Stevens and his wife, Mary, made the contribution to the Neuroimaging and Informatics Institute, which plans to use the money to research new therapies for brain injuries and disease. Head researcher Dr. Arthur Toga says the gift will fund the institute for years to come.
Understanding the complexities of this type of research and appreciating the resources that it takes to conduct it, it says a lot. You know, it's a partnership, right? You want a partnership between philanthropy and academia, because we're all in this together. We're trying to make some discoveries that teach us a lot about who we are as humans, but also help in the condition of various diseases.
Stevens has served on the Board of Trustees at USC since 2001. The gift pushed USC to the $4 billion mark in fundraising on the year. Its goal is $6 billion.
Sports Minute
with Max Holm.
The NCAA released documents today from their case against former USC football coach Todd McNair. The documents included very negative comments about the school, which coincides with how unfairly USC has felt they've been treated over the years. On a lighter note, boxes of petitions to approve the building of an NFL stadium in Carson were dropped off at City Hall today as the race for an LA franchise heats up. Meanwhile, Forbes announced today that the Dodgers are the second most valuable MLB franchise behind the Yankees. Those same Dodgers made another big offseason move today, agreeing to a six-year deal with coveted Cuban infielder Hector Olivera. The 29-year-old is set to make $62.5 million. Both of LA's basketball teams are in action tonight. The Lakers face the Timberwolves in a vital landmark lottery battle where the loser will improve their lottery odds, and the Clippers face the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. And finally, tomorrow, Los Angeles plays host to two Sweet 16 matchups in the NCAA tournament, North Carolina and Wisconsin, along with Xavier and Arizona. This has been the Sports Minute with Max Holm, Annenberg Radio News.
The Coliseum will host an important football, meaning soccer, game this weekend. Amy Lopez breaks down the matchup.
11 defienden, llega la bola, le pegó Herrera al remate.
Gol!
this is pretty much what one should expect to hear at the Los Angeles Coliseum on March 28th. The legendary and historic venue will host one of the most popular international soccer teams in the world, Mexico. It's been quite a number of years since the team has visited the Coliseum. Coliseum General Manager Joe Furin is happy to bring international soccer back.
You could see the popularity is growing. You could see things like the watch parties during the last World Cup. Those are all indicative of soccer becoming more mainstream, becoming more accepted. It's no longer thought of as quote-unquote that other sport. We can host a game and we certainly don't have to explain to anyone what soccer is.
According to a Washington Post article, the 2014 World Cup brought in a record-breaking number of TV viewers. The final between Germany and Argentina brought in over 26.5 million viewers on English and Spanish language channels combined. The rest of the tournament games averaged 4.5 million viewers, making it the most watched World Cup ever in U.S. history. USC sports media lecturer Jeff Fellinger was one of its new viewers.
You know, the World Cup, it's kind of the World Cup fever. I got caught up in it last summer, and I'm anxious to see soccer at the highest level, and this is what this provides, this opportunity.
Excellent viewership during the tournament has translated to people really wanting to see a game in person, especially in L.A.
Ticket sales are going very, very strong. We're looking at a capacity crowd that night, which means 80,000 plus. Los Angeles, with 19 million people, is diverse enough to support a wide number of things, and I think they've proven over and over that soccer is one of the things that they support.
80,000? So that means a lot of this. Patricia Sanchez owns the U.S. soccer shop across the street from the Coliseum. She is amazed by how the community has reacted.
Everyone is happy regardless of background. The whole world, even non-Mexicans. I have customers who are Central American but married to Mexicans, and they tell me I want Mexico to win.
I think it's safe to say that this game and its players will get nothing but warm reception from the people of Los Angeles. Mexico will be facing Ecuador on Saturday, March 28th. Kickoff is at 6 p.m., and it's sure to be a good one. Amy Lopez, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA City Council today agreed to block the construction of mansion-sized homes on small lots in 20 historic neighborhoods. Morgan Greenwald reports.
The new restrictions will halt demolition and building permits for property owners in 20 communities. Some of the neighborhoods are being considered for historical status, like Carthy Square, Holmby, and Berkshire Craftsman in El Sereno. Homeowners say this mansionization is an invasion of privacy because the massive homes tower over neighboring properties and may even take up portions of their lots. The new ordinances will remain in place for 2 years as the council develops a more permanent solution to the mansionization trend. Morgan Greenwald, Annenberg Radio News.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Casey Tamkin with today's Root Source.
The dictionary will tell you California is the name of a state on the West Coast bordering the Pacific Ocean. To us, California is home. It means sunshine, beaches, and palm trees. Cali is also the subject of many famous songs.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
How did the Golden State get its name? California first appeared in a 16th century Spanish novel as the name of a mythical island in the Amazon. Two Spanish explorers then dubbed Mexico's western peninsula the Island of California. Eventually, the territory expanded into present-day California and parts of Nevada, Utah, Arizona, and Wyoming, becoming the Lost Californias province of New Spain. After Mexico's independence and the United States' expansion from coast to coast, the California we know today emerged. So keep on California dreaming.
If I was in LA, California, California dreaming on such a winter's day.
Stopped into a church.
Keith Mitchell spent 8 years in the NFL as a star athlete. But when a spinal injury ended his career, the young linebacker took up a new hobby, yoga. Megan Coyle sat down with football's master of meditation.
So tell me a little bit about the accident that really changed your life.
It was actually week two, our home opener in Jacksonville. We were playing the Buffalo Bills, making a random tackle that I had done a million times in my life. This tackle, I hit the guy. The running back was actually Travis Henry. I tackled him head first, anticipated the play, ended up on my back. After you make a big collision like that, you typically get up and celebrate with your teammates. But on this particular play, as I was telling myself to get up, my body didn't respond.
So what happened after that? They got you off the field and then?
So as I was on the field, actually, they didn't move me for like probably 45 minutes. And, you know, the interesting thing is my thoughts as I was going through this, I was like, you know, this is embarrassing. And which is very interesting when you talk about the psyche of the athlete in that position of being, there's no telling at that point. I didn't have any idea what I had done, you know, what type of damage I had done to my body. But nevertheless, I basically passed out, woke up the next morning in the hospital with the same feeling of numbness, the same feeling of uncertainty.
What got you into meditation and yoga?
I was diagnosed with a spinal contusion. I went to my second opinion, my doctor. He had this therapist, you know, come see me time to time. And through the period of her seeing me, she talked to me about conscious breathing and what that meant.
So what does that mean?
Conscious breathing for me was breathing from the diaphragm on the inhale. The diaphragm pushes down. On the exhale, it pushes up. And in that, there's an inheritance that we've been gifted to heal ourselves.
Wow. So that's how you healed yourself.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because when you talk about the conditioning and how as an athlete, I had been trained in a sense of what's the playbook? You know, who's the opponent? And in this case, the playbook was, okay, conscious breathing, my playbook. Who's the opponent? The ailment that I'm suffering from right now. My only thought was in that place of just openness to be committed to it because, okay, I can take this, I can heal myself, then I'm going to do it.
What are the benefits of mindful yoga specifically for football players?
Most football players, most athletes, most people in general don't have a mind practice. You see people training, you know, all the time, or you got CrossFit, you got all this, but it's like, how are you developing your mind? So this is a process of understanding how I process information and make it applicable to myself.
What are you still working on?
What I'm still working on is just, you know, it's really just allowing myself to just develop and be. The KM59 care plan is a concept that through the Light It Up Foundation, my charity, we've collaborated with the University of Rochester's medical group that we're going to take 250 veterans and 250 retired players and take them through a 3-year program to help them transition to life again after their sport. It's a revolution of change that's so needed. And it's so interesting because we were able to cross barriers, you know, through sports. You know, the men, you know, they can't deny in a sense of when I come to the approach and talk about yoga meditation, well, it's so different than you going to them and talking about yoga meditation because they can say, well, you know, you're flexible because you're like, you're a girl, you're a gymnast and all that kind of stuff. But then when it comes to me, they don't have excuses. So we've been able to get really good connections that way.
Do you miss football?
Do I miss football? You know what? I miss my teammates. And it's so cool because through what we're up to, we get a chance to bring my teammates back in the picture.
So would you trade yoga for like 5 more years of football?
I wouldn't, because the dynamics of what we're actually creating here now goes way beyond. We're going to revolutionize how people perceive their healthcare. We're going to change the ideal of Western medicine. That's huge to hold this space of like, hey, I teach meditation, I teach yoga. But understanding what that, you know, what that means to me and not needing the validation of others in that sense. I think this is way more important than playing the game, again, which I love, but this is so much more fulfilling.
Wow. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's it for this Wednesday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker.